You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Unlikable Female Characters, the podcast featuring feminist thriller writers and conversation about women who don't give a damn if you like them. I'm Wendy Hurd, and I'm here with Kristen Leigh Pianca.
Hello.
And Lane Fargo.
Hello.
I have a really important question for you two today, which is, how are your breasts feeling?
In an emotional sense?
In an emotional sense.
I feel like you have to give the people context for this, Wendy.
Well, no. I mean, because mine are feeling sad and depressed. So that's taking an effect. So we'd like to thank a wonderful person on Twitter named Jess Layton at A Geek with a Hat, which is really cute Twitter handle, by the way, for posting this following passage from The Marriage Plot by Jeffrey Eugenides. I'm sorry, I don't know how to say the last name. When she'd stopped crying, Madeline composed herself before the mirror. Her skin looked blotchy. Her breasts, of which she was normally proud, had withdrawn into themselves as if depressed. And I have some anatomical questions about what men think are behind breasts, because there's rib cage back there.
Like, where have they withdrawn to exactly?
Do they suck into the ribs, like squeeze themselves into the ribs?
Just sadness and shame. They're just like, no.
When I cry, I notice my breasts suction themselves into themselves.
Just like a really bad inverted nipple situation?
Yes.
Like, I don't understand.
I think the nipple sucks the breast in until it's
okay.
Like a Bermuda Triangle.
Wow.
It just folds up like one of those coat in a bag where you fold the raincoat into its own pocket.
Correct.
And toss it in your suitcase.
Yes.
Cool. Uh-huh.
Like one of those airplane neck pillows that turns into.
I mean, I'm pretty depressed right now, but my tits look amazing. I don't know what to say.
Have you considered that it might help you feel better if you suck them into themselves?
I feel like that could only make me feel worse.
I don't think that would make you feel better. So poor Madeline here is normally proud of her breasts, but now that they're depressed, she's just ashamed of all of it. So
even that's the proud thing is very it's not really I don't know. I think I have great boobs, but proud, they're an accomplishment. I don't know. Doesn't seem right.
Your learned degree of breastiness. Why are men allowed to write books? That
I don't
is
know.
A question.
I don't know. We ask every week.
I always also ask, you're an editor. You've read books before. You've met women.
Was this part of a long con or something? Some editor was this is bullshit and I'm going to leave it there. Make old Jeff look like an asshole.
I don't know.
I mean, he has more money than we'll ever have, so whatever. But he doesn't care what we think about his book.
No.
I wonder if there was a note and he was no, this is correct.
This is how breasts work.
Winning author. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if we need a sex ed episode that we could allow people to forward to men. Breasts are not retractable. Women's genitals do not elongate into a long pointer that can then be, remember, our sex scene episode.
Oh, I can never forget. We're really providing a public service.
Yes.
I hope everyone appreciates it.
Things you didn't think that men needed to be told.
Yeah. Right. I mean, presumably, if you're going to write from the perspective of a female human woman, you might have seen one or spoken to one before in your life at some point, presumably. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know his life.
I don't know his life either.
I have no judgment about people not having, like, you know, not having a certain amount of sexual prowess or experience or right. anything. But it does make me wonder if these men have, if they're virgins, like if they've ever been in the room with a naked woman.
Or if they've ever sought the opinion of a woman on their work.
Or just looked at a picture or like.
or that.
But the women in porn, they're not depressed. They're proud of their breasts are just like out there, you know, doing
with
the work.
Drawn into themselves.
Oh my God.
Where?
I mean, I don't want to read this book, but at the same time, like, I am curious for the context of, like, what has made poor Madeline so upset to become blotchy and have her prideful breasts withdraw into themselves. Like,
I don't know.
What happened to her?
Look at us. We talked about this for 5 entire minutes.
Well done.
Well done. Don't you dare.
No. This is solid gold.
Anyway, we do have a topic today that's not about breasts, sad breasts. We could do a whole episode on that, I feel like. We're off to a good start.
We probably could.
Our actual topic today, we're going to talk about the archetype of the head bitch in charge.
Woot.
Woo.
Which we've been kind of saving. Like, we wanted to talk about women in power, and we thought, like, now that we have a female vice president, shout out, that this would be a great time to kind of dig into it. So I wanted to start off with this quote, which I feel like kind of frames this whole discussion around women in power. I've been thinking about this quote a lot since I read it. So this is from Kate Mann's book Entitled, which is all about, like, patriarchy and how it hurts everyone. So she says, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but she says, women who seek power are disliked because they don't display enough communality. Like, they don't care enough about the community. It's like they're just seeking power for themselves. And all the things that we consider leadership material, like something that's presidential, are things that we praise in men, like, you know, being charismatic, giving good speeches, being commanding, all that stuff. It's like good in men. In women, she's like being a bitch and should sit down and shut up.
Yeah.
Right.
So women can seek power, but they shouldn't be out for power for themselves. They have to be seeking it to serve others. But they can't be opportunistic or striving about it. She says communal behavior only seems to count in a woman's favor if it can be attributed to stable traits of character or her own authentic nature. So it's like you have to be communal, but it has to like come from your heart and not be like a political strategy. So right. Like, what the fuck? Let's talk about this. I hate it.
And this is an interesting one because it's like, you know, this is one of those interesting topics where it's like, should women become more like men or should men become more like women? Like, should men be more communal and less self-centered and less this, you know what I mean? Or like, it is an interesting topic because I don't think anyone would argue that like, oh yeah, we should all be just self-centered and self-aggrandizing and out for our own and power hungry. Like,
right.
I don't think in any way that we're arguing that.
No, but you can't like repair the imbalance by women being communal minded and men continuing to be the way they are. Like,
exactly.
Like, men are not going to relinquish the power that they have had for all this time. Like, that's at the heart of so many conflicts, the refusal to relinquish it. So it's like, in a perfect world, sure, they would be less like that, but there is like there's like no fucking way.
Yeah.
Basically.
I'm so hung up on this idea of like, it has to, you can, if you're communal, it has to seem authentic. It can't seem like a strategy. Like she, Kate Mann in this book talks about Elizabeth Warren specifically, who I know we're all big fans of here. And she basically said that Liz Warren did a really great job of being communal. Like that was part of the reason she got so far. Like she was seeking power, but it was clearly to serve other people, to serve like the country. But then that whole fucking thing with Bernie Sanders happened where she said that he had like told her he didn't think a woman could beat Donald Trump. I forget exactly what it was. And then everyone, I mean, not everyone, assholes, like turned on her. And the narrative was she's being self-serving. by attacking him. And I saw a lot of like, well, they're friends and she's not being a good friend. And I'm like, oh my God, are you fucking kidding me?
Can like, you imagine someone saying that about a man?
No. And I'm like, you know who's not being a good friend? Bernie Sanders, who shouldn't have been running for president again. He should have like, sat the fuck down and supported her from the beginning because he had his chance and he already fucked it up for Hillary.
Right.
I have a lot of feelings about Bernie Sanders. But
I know. Same. Yeah, I'm like,
if anyone's not being a good friend, it's him. But we don't care if men are good friends. Like, we don't.
Right.
It's as a society.
Infuriating.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were all these conversations around, like, Kamala said this in a debate about Biden. So, you know what I mean? Like, she's ingenuous and, like, she's just out for herself and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it was a debate. That was what they were there for. And, like, the idea that, like, she couldn't do a political pivot to, like, be on the ticket without being this, like, manipulative, conniving, blah, 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 blah. When it's like,
yeah,
if she had been a man in that same – I have seen men in that same exact situation where they debate in the primaries and then one of the men spawned the ticket and it's like nothing.
Well, I mean, how about all of the Trump sycophants who were running against him and saying things about him like Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham? And then, you know, 4 years later, that's all been forgotten that they said these things that like they've changed their minds completely. And there is no pushback on that because it doesn't matter. That's just how men are and it's fine.
That moment in the debate, the like famous moment when Kamala called Joe Biden out for his like stance on busing and everything like that, really, it was an incredible moment. And I remember seeing a lot of discourse after that on, you know, Twitter and elsewhere, where it was like she planned that. It seemed like she like practiced it and planned it. And I'm like, of course she did. Are you fucking kidding me? Like she planned it because it's a debate and you want to be prepared for like taking control of the conversation and having these memorable moments. And like, of course she planned it. But that's the same thing again. It's like she can be seeking power and, you know, trying to get elected, but she has to seem like it's all coming naturally. Like she cares about the country and it's all like because she's just like this naturally nice and compassionate and caring person. Like any kind of trying too hard or striving or whatever is like just gets turned against women. And it's so frustrating.
It's like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when in like the first debate between Hillary and Trump, there was the sort of narrative afterwards of, but was Hillary too prepared?
Yes. Chuck Todd said that. Oh, and, like, every time I see him, I like scream at his face.
He is horrible.
Literally every time Nate turns on the news and Chuck Todd is there, I'm like, fuck you, Chuck Todd. I'm like so angry about that still. Because I'm like, it is not possible to be too prepared for a presidential debate. That is not a thing. And you would never say that about a man ever. Like, it's just, it's again this thing of like the same thing in the, we were talking about in the Vain Woman episode. It's like, you have to try just hard enough, but not too hard. Because then it's pathetic. Then it's like too much. It has to seem natural.
Yes. No one can tell that you tried. No one can tell that you are attempting to do your best. It has to seem like you don't even care. And it just, you know, it's just, it just comes off that way. And like, no human being can operate in like that. Like, that's just not real.
Right. Right. I mean, we want to talk in this episode, not just about politics, that we want to talk about, like, I mean, I feel like we could do a whole episode on like the girl boss archetype and all that stuff. But we do want to talk about women and other kinds of power, like in corporations and stuff like that too. But it's the same thing. It's like, you have to have, as a woman in a position of power in a company, you have to have this very specific management style where it's like you're caring and compassionate, but you're not a pushover. And you can't just like yell at people and go off like a man could, but like you can't be too nice. Like it's just, it's the tightrope thing again. Always the tightrope. And even more so for women of color, like white women have it easy compared to them. It just, it's like this narrow, narrow, narrow like zone of behavior that is acceptable, and it's a trap. It's fucking stupid.
And even just like sort of looking back at my own like professional experience, the types of bosses that I had, like women versus men, like the male bosses that I had, like working in marketing, they were just like absolute lunatic human beings and they could get away with any, like just so much absolute madness. And it's just like, you cannot even imagine a woman getting away with that. Like, and then getting promoted even. Like, these men just behave this way. They terrorize everyone who works for them. Their horrible to deal with. They get promoted and promoted while women sort of stall out at, like, you know, the middle management level. And it's just like, it's a constant thing. And it's like, how can you be rewarding this type of behavior in a man and then ignoring women who are more than qualified to do the work at the same time? Like, oh, so mad.
And there's this narrative too, when women kind of tap out at the middle management level, they're like, well, she just doesn't have leadership qualities. She doesn't want enough. She's not working hard enough. But it's the same thing where it's like the things that are leadership qualities, if a woman does them, are unacceptable. So,
right.
Should we start with Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada?
Of course. Yes. I mean, I know we talked about her in the Vain Woman episode too, I think, but like,
what can we do?
An iconic character.
What can we
do? Miranda Priestly.
I really feel like she's reading from a playbook of, like, how to be the head bitch in charge. Like, this is the woman.
Well, what's so interesting about her is she doesn't yell at people. She's very quiet. And that was something Meryl Streep, I watched an interview with her where she was talking about this, that's like she kept her voice really soft. So then it's like the power of making people lean in to hear you and get closer and like kind of bow to you almost. That's really interesting.
She has gray hair, which I found interesting. Do you know what I mean? Like, she had a full, beautiful, like, gray and white streaked bob.
Yes.
Yes.
Stunning. But she's a scary lady. Like, everyone's terrified of her.
Yes.
But she doesn't yell and she doesn't, like, throw things. I mean, she throws her coat on her assistant's desk every day, I guess. But, you know, it's like this quiet menace.
Yes. She is, like, very elegant and very polished. And, like, when she is sort of doing – when she is doing what she would be doing when she was yelling, you know, like, she doesn't yell. She, instead of yelling it, she just says it softly. It's just as devastating as yelling. And she is also extremely, like, demanding and unreasonable. Like, with, you know, demanding the Harry Potter manuscript.
But we kind of love her, right? Don't we – we, like, love her. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's amazing, but, like, you can, like you can, I don't know, like, women don't often get to be that demanding, unreasonable boss. Like, that's the male boss that we all have.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting thinking about having that sort of power over people, but we don't want to work for her.
No.
No. I have worked for some pretty epic unreasonable bosses, and she is by far the most terrifying.
My worst boss ever was a woman, actually.
Me too.
Yeah, so that is interesting. But, like, did we, I don't know, I'm like, would I have, how would I have interpreted the same behavior from a man? Because we got that internalized misogyny.
Well, I had a boss who used to bring us into her office and, like, do crazy things, like, man or woman. I am confident that it was unsettling in its nature. Okay, so should we talk about Quinn from Unreal?
Quinn is an interesting one because I feel like she's more trying to act like a man in that role. Like, she's more brash and, like, again, not really, like, she doesn't really yell at people. She's more manipulative. But she's kind of, like, hard charging and, like, what is that thing they get tattooed on the money dick power, right?
She's definitely, like, a bully. She's a manipulative bully who will just do whatever it takes to get you to do what she wants.
I think we're talking about all, like, bad examples again. Women can be bosses and be awesome. Well, you wanted to talk about Grey's Anatomy. There's some lots of interesting female
power. Let's, like, talk about power Bailey. On that show. Bailey is an HBIC. She's sometimes called the Nazi by her subordinates, right? By the interns who are scared of her because she has a habit of yelling and scolding when someone has done something wrong. She's very, like, outspoken when someone has done something wrong. And she just, like, has – she's like, you will do it right. But – I think that's a good example of someone who's maybe, like, I don't think that she's ever unfair. She demands that they, like, do good patient care, and she gets mad at them for doing things like having sex in a public place at work. You know, like, hello.
The backbone of Grey's Anatomy, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, like, as the show goes on, in particular, like, her character becomes much more complex, and you understand that she's coming from this place of, like, caring about the patients and caring about the interns as well, and, like, wanting mm-hmm. them to become good doctors. So that's the communality thing. Like, she's doing it for the good of the community, not just to be mean or because she's on a power trip. I do mm-hmm. think in the first season, it's a little bit more black and white. Like, she just seems like a harsh boss, but Shandra Wilson is such an amazing actress. Like, she just brings so much to it. That, like, she, I think they started writing more complex things for her as mm-hmm. well. But, like, even from the beginning, you can see there's a lot more going on there. And then there's Catherine Fox on Grey's Anatomy, who is, like, the ultimate head bitch in charge. She, like, yes. at this point in the show, she, like, owns the hospital, I think. Mm-hmm. And she's more of that Miranda Priestly, like, mm-hmm. quiet sort of, like, you see the resting bitch face and you're, like, in for it kind of thing. Like, I remember this one scene where someone has made her angry and she just, like, looks at him in a way that would, like, freeze your blood. She doesn't yell. Like, she doesn't have to yell. I love her.
I want to say something real quick about on another medical drama. So Carrie Weaver from ER. When I first watched ER, like, it's so funny because, like, that was a show that I was watching in, like, middle school. and I sort of had this idea of, like, Carrie Weaver was such a shrew, and these male, the men who are the main characters on this show are, like, these poor men. But then, like, watching it as an adult, I did a rewatch of it last year during the Great Nothing. The men on the ER are terrible. Carrie Weaver is a boss and she's, like, awesome. She's taking care of shit, and, like, she's, like, the only person in that hospital who knows what they're doing.
And that is the crux, isn't it?
Yes.
There it is.
Like, would she have to be so bitchy if those men weren't so awful? I haven't watched ER, and, oh, my God, like, I can't even remember. I did used to watch it, like, way back in the day, but...
Yeah, there's a lot of seasons of ER. The first The first handful are, like, pretty good, and then, like, there's a long slog towards its end. We watched the entire thing at some point last year. We were just wanted to have something in the background.
Gotta do what we gotta do during these
times.
Yeah,
the men are all awful.
I really love Christina Yang on Grey's Anatomy. Like, she's always my favorite character. But she's kind of like a mini HBIC because she's just an intern, you know, at the beginning. But she's already, like, she's a good example of someone who's like, I am in charge of my life. I am the boss of my life. I have decided to be excellent because I want to. I do mm-hmm. not care if you approve of that. Like, she's extremely, like, explicit about this. And it's really interesting to see her get into these relationships and friendships where... people, even the people who love her the most, are constantly trying to undermine it all the time. Mm-hmm. And I find that really, like, uncomfortably real.
Yeah.
It's like, well, she settles down with Burke. You know, well, can't she just chill? You know, can't she just?
No, she fucking can't.
Can't she just?
Christina Yang.
I just love her so much.
Yeah, I almost wish, I know she, like, Sandra Oh wanted to leave the show and everything, but they still mention her sometimes because the way they wrote her off was to, like, mm-hmm. make her the boss of some big hospital in, like, Switzerland or something. And I'm just like, I want that spinoff. I want, like, Christina Yang, boss bitch in Switzerland.
Well, she got Burke's practice in Switzerland. Like, he gave it to her, right? Like, he handed over the keys, which was kind of a beautiful way to wrap up that arc after all that time.
That's the least he could do.
Yeah.
That jerk.
You know what's funny? I really actually felt for Burke at the beginning there when he was just trying to make a connection with Christina and she was just like, I don't have time for you. I don't want to. I just want, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I did feel for him there, but because there is that part of being the, you know, being that person, I think, that is isolating. Like, the HBIC is not always someone who has time for a lot of people in their life, right? Like, they're not always the person who's got a successful family, etc.
Yeah, that's true. It's like you have to push other things out in order to be successful, where, like, men expect, like, if they're the boss, they expect to have, like, a whole support system.
Yeah. Home,
like, their wives and secretaries at work and everything. Yeah. Some other examples. Well, in Megan Abbott's book, Give Me Your Hand, mm-hmm. I was thinking about Dr. Severin, the boss in that, is a really mm-hmm. interesting example. And then also Bethany and Amy Gentry's book, Bad Habits, that just came out, is, like, she's someone who is, like, extremely manipulative and, like, playing people off of each other. I think that's something we see a lot in, like, women don't have access to this power of just, like, screaming at people. So they're using these, like, the soft skills that we're all good at and kind of trained in and also criticized for, but using those things to manage the people under them, this, like, manipulative, interpersonal kind of, I don't know. It's not good, but. Bridgerton. We should talk about, like, the ladies on Bridgerton. So the queen is an interesting one.
Yeah, she is.
Because she's just, like, in everyone's shit all the time, which I loved. But also Lady Danbury, who's, like, probably the best character on the show. Like, can we agree? Okay. She's amazing. And she's someone who is, like, extremely in charge of everything. But she's not, like, she's a sympathetic character. We're supposed to root for her. Like, she's not portrayed as this, like, awful, awful woman. She's just, she's the boss.
She said something really interesting. She has a line I will never forget where she says, and I wonder if this is from the book. She's telling him when he's a kid, he has a speech impediment. And she said, I used to always be so afraid. I'd walk into a room and I was afraid of people. I was terrified of what people were thinking. And she said, so I decided to become terrifying.
Yes.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh, I love you.
But she's not, like, it's interesting with her because she's not. She's, like, intimidating, I guess, is what
she's
I would
say. She's
not
mean. She doesn't do mean things.
No.
Yeah, she's not terrifying in the sense of, like, people fear her, but they respect her immensely, which is better.
And that's what I found so interesting was that I think in a patriarchy, when a woman brings that kind of presence into a room, people find it terrifying. Mm-hmm. Just that you take up that amount of space or just that you seem so solid and unmovable and like certain of yourself and like the fact that you don't seem like you'll be easily manipulated or you don't seem like you will do all the things like make nice, do this facial expression, do all these things, you know.
It's a similar thing with Kamala Harris and like her amazing facial expressions during like the various Senate hearings or the vice presidential debate or the I'm speaking like that moment. She's just she's immovable. She's just like, this is who I am and I have power here and I'm not going to back down. And that's why we love her so much. But that is interesting. Like she is, it's like she's only terrifying if you deserve to be terrified. Brett Kavanaugh.
Only, oh God, the sweating that was happening. I mean, that's what's interesting is that, you know, who finds that terrifying is a very interesting study, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like the HBIC is sort of like the litmus test for someone's real thoughts on women because it's like, I like strong women, but, you know, we've talked about that before.
Right.
And it's like, you know, in the case of the debate where she says, I'm speaking, she's like stating a fact there. She was speaking. And yet that is something that like, you can see how people latch onto that as like, oh, she was being rude by saying that she was speaking, which she was. Like, so, you know, you're in this thing where, like, just by stating the truth, that somehow becomes, like, impudent if you're a woman.
And you're right about the litmus test thing, Wendy, because it's what we see over and over in politics. It's always like, well, I would vote for a woman, but not that woman. And it changes every single time. It's like, well, I would vote for a woman, but not Hillary Clinton. I would vote for a woman, but not Liz Warren. Like she was a bad friend to Bernie Sanders. And then they talk about these, you know, younger liberal women like AOC or like, and then they're like, oh, well, maybe when she runs for president. And I'm like, no, you're going to turn on her too. Like immediately. Yeah. I just... It's already happening.
Wow.
And then I think there's like an interesting thing about like if she, there is a sort of like, I don't know if men realize they feel this, but I really do think they feel this, is that, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I want to say like even more so with a woman of color, but like that place you're occupying, there's only one head person in charge. And so when you take that place of being in charge, you took it from a man. It was supposed to belong to a man. And there's that feeling of like, you're sitting in someone else's chair. Like, you're not the one who, you're not supposed to be the center of this. You're not supposed to be like at the top of this. I am. There's like a sort of like anger, you know?
That's basically what Kate Mann's book Entitled is about. Like, yeah. That men feel entitled to this power and anybody else trying to take it. And she goes through like all the different, you know, permutations of power and talks about, I don't know, it's an amazing book. I'm not doing it justice, but that's basically what it's about, is like men feel entitled to all sorts of things. They feel entitled to power and to women's bodies and to be coddled and like for society to work in their favor. And then when anyone questions that, they get like really fucking upset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I did want to, before we move on to our next topic here, I wanted to bring up kind of like a more positive version of the HPIC.
Yeah,
Leslie Knope from Parks and Rec.
Yes.
Like, let's talk about this, because she is like, she's the boss. Like, she's in charge. I mean, she runs for office and she's like very communal minded. Like, everything she does is for her town. Like, she's not power hungry for like her own advancement, it doesn't seem like. And yeah. I'm wondering if that is why people love Leslie Knope so much.
That could be, because like no one really like accuses as a bad thing Leslie Knope of being overprepared, even though like that's like her thing, is being overprepared. Like, she's so prepared.
They do make fun of her for it, though.
They do, yeah, but it's like teasing.
Yeah,
but it's like they think it's cute that yeah. she's so like earnest and wants yeah. things to get done. And that's another thing, this sort of like infantilizing mm-hmm. of like, oh, it's so cute that you care so much. Like,
yeah.
Ugh. Right. I think that with Leslie Knope in particular, that's like a perfect way of looking at it, because she's very serious about these binders she puts together and all these mm-hmm. like projects she does. And everyone around her is constantly like, settle down. Okay. That was okay. Well, good job. You did a lot of binders. This is a lot of work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, very infantilizing with all of the things she's so passionate about.
Yeah. It's like, we, like, I don't know, viewers of that show and like people in general love her, but there is this element of like, she's not cool to care right. that much.
Yeah, she is a very earnest person, and like I can see how like that doesn't feel like calculating and self-serving to, it's not threatening to men because it's not mm-hmm. calculating and self-serving.
So she's not taken seriously, but she's not hated.
Right.
Well, also, like, if we're being honest, Ron is the boss. She's That's not the true. Boss. And, like, everyone around her, the worst part of that show, which is so painfully accurate, is that everyone around her sees that she's working so hard, and they just do nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
They're just like, oh, she'll do it.
That's a good segue into the next thing we wanted to talk about. Wendy, why don't you kick this one off? I feel like you deserve to talk about this the most.
I feel like I'm coming to the microphone with like a bottle of Jack Daniels clutched in one fist and like a beard. Like, I never grown a beard, but I have one now. The next one we're going to talk about is this constant. I like how they keep unearthing this. Like, they keep re-researching this, which makes me so happy that they keep republishing the same thing, which is like, the pandemic is so much harder for women than men in households with children. And like, that's my favorite thing, because it's like we keep rediscovering it. You know, it's like we know. Yeah. We keep doing these exposés where it's like, more examples. This guy is awful. And so is this guy. Three close examples. Another five examples. And then like, here's the Harvard study. It's like, okay, we believe you.
Yeah, we know. It's obvious. But this is like the, you know, we talk about the head bitch in charge, and it's kind of this tongue-in-cheek thing. It's like a cute little phrase. But like, it's like women who are in charge of a lot of things might be a little bitchy because they have too much on their fucking plates and they don't have time for anyone's bullshit. And they're like fed up. And like, we're seeing that in these constant exposés. You're right. It is. It's like every few weeks they rediscover this like shocking truth. But the latest one was that... was the New York Times piece where they're talking about, it's like a couple where the man and the woman were both working from home, but he's like the breadwinner. He makes more money. So he has his office and he's on the phone like with clients. And then the mom is trying to work while like wiping the kid's ass and like making snacks yep. and everything. And then this is like while a reporter is in the house. So yeah, it must be right. worse when the reporter's not there. So like while someone from the New York Times is observing him, his wife is like drowning in all of this work and childcare. And he's like, making popcorn, taking a nap on the couch. I'm like, please murder this man. Like, he deserves to be murdered. And I hope he has a lot of life insurance and that you don't get caught. Because, like, what the fuck?
I mean, it is one of those things where, like, okay, so I feel like if you break it down, it's like this. You have a heterosexual couple, maybe not heterosexual, but like a boy-girl couple, okay? Mm-hmm. Your traditional nuclear family is in action, okay? They both get jobs, but she knows she wants to have children eventually, so she picks a career that will work around those children more easily, knowing that she's going to be bearing the brunt of the childcare and domestic duty. So as a result, she's always made less money than him. And when she does have children, sure enough, she's able to put in fewer hours at work. She's able to apply for fewer promotions. She can't do extra hours. She can't do extra projects. She can't travel. She can't work weekends. She can't work nights. And so she now 5-10 years into the marriage is making, you know, $80,000 a year less than her husband. So then the pandemic hits. And guess what? He earns more money, so his job needs to be prioritized. So she's doing most of the, you know, she's taking the hit when it comes to, like, she's on Zoom meetings while doing virtual kindergarten, and she's wiping butts while she's on the phone, and she's making lunch while she's on the, you know, in a Zoom meeting, and, like, you know, she can't have her camera on very often because she's constantly got children crawling all over her, and he can have his camera on because when it's time to work, he goes and locks himself in whatever room he's designated as his office. And she's kind of like just on duty with all this happening at the same time. And it's just this really depressing thing where it's like, we'll always make less money because we can always put less in because we always get less help, you know? And yeah. So it's this constant thing where, like, women are, you know, are just like doomed to constantly make less money than their male counterparts, who then use that as an excuse to do less around the house.
Right.
And I think, like, the end result for a lot of these couples, because I've seen this play out too many times as well, is, like, then the man is like, honey, you're just, like, not fun and sexy anymore. You're, like, so angry all the time. You're so stressed out. And then he, like, fucks some young woman that he meets who's, like, you know, makes him feel alive again. And it just, a tale as old as time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Reading all of these just makes my tubes, like, tie a little tighter. Can't do it.
Oh God. I did not have a second child when I got remarried, and I have never been more proud of that decision. Because I knew it would just be too much for me. I already have one. I was a single mom. You know, I'm already, because I'm the bio mom, I'm doing the majority of the child stuff. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it often goes in step-parent relationships, and I'm happy with that. But I was like, there's no way I'm having another one. I'll never be able to get anything done. And sure enough, and now here I am. And I don't have another one in the pandemic.
Yeah, but then it's weaponized against women. It's just like, well, you made that choice and you weren't ambitious enough. But then, like, you can't be too ambitious. It's again, the fine line.
Well, it's like this. No one's stopping you from putting more hours in at work. Look, if you want to do that, you could get a nanny and do that. Right. And it's like, well, why should I have to get a nanny when I have a partner? Wasn't that the whole point that we would share this? And I don't want to, it's like, you might not want to leave your children with a stranger. You know, you might not want to hire someone to raise your children for you. You'd like them to be with family members, like the person you freaking had the children with. Yeah.
And the conversation about this is so often too, I'll see people like tweeting about it and they're like, these men should help out more. And I'm like, no, they're not helping out.
No, it's not helping out. It's not babysitting when it's your own child. Like, no. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. So it seems like to be the classical, you know, head bitch in charge, it's almost like you have to turn away from some of these domestic things. Like, you have to either not have kids or have a nanny, or like, and then people say you're a bad mother, right? Like, it's just there's no winning. And then when women get stressed out and overwhelmed and are like, yeah, a little bitchy, then that gets thrown back in their faces too. It's like, it's a miracle that all of these men aren't just murdered in their sleep.
Well, that's the other thing is, like, you're supposed to still be in love with your spouse, and, like, you're supposed to still be, like, that's the other thing is that, you know, after all that, you know, after that whole day of, like, butt wiping and Zoom calls while he's, like, taking naps and eating popcorn, she's supposed to still go be in love with him. Right. Like, forget sex. Like, she's supposed to still love him. Just the amount, like, the emotional gymnastics it takes, and, like, the self-talk and the narrative that I think
some women have to go through in order to stay married is it's unhealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you stated these things bluntly like this to in these moments, you know, it would not go well.
Mm-hmm. Well, probably by the time we're recording this a few weeks early, and I wonder what, you know, which outlet will have discovered this anew by the time the episode gets released. We can link to the
research. The next expose.
it's like at this point they keep releasing them, and it's almost getting like more depressing with every release of an expose on this, which is like, we know.
Fucked up.
Yeah. Well, now I'm depressed.
I know.
My boobs are going to like burrow inside my rib cage.
I think it's like a shriveling.
It's the inevitable conclusion of this episode. Our sad, shriveled, withdrawn, inside-out breasts.
No, we should all be boss bitches and proud of our breasts.
Yes.
That's the end of this episode.
That's it for this episode of Unlikable Female Characters. Don't forget to subscribe, and you can also follow us on Twitter at UnlikableFCPod for updates, book recommendations, and angry feminist rants. Our website is unlikablefemalecharacters.com, and we're also on Instagram at UnlikableFemaleCharacters. Thanks for listening.